6. Johnny shed his jet backpack. It was almost expended anyway. Not taking his eyes from Turl, he drew the belt gun and slid off its safety. Turl had been on fire for a moment. He was not now. He had rolled it out in the damp spring grass. He was 50 feet away. He was lying motionless. He had a breathe mask on. Johnny approached cautiously. This was a very treacherous beast. He walked within 40 feet. 30 feet. Turl was just lying there, inert. A statement Robert the Fox had made drifted through Johnny's head.
Plan well, but when battle is joined, expect the unexpected, and cope with it.
Turl's escape had scrambled their plans. The compound down there was without air cover. The Lord alone knew what was going on. The sound of gunfire was rattling and thudding in the distance. The mutter of flames came from the burning plains nearby. Johnny didn't look. He had his eyes on Turl, watchful. He stopped. 25 feet was close enough. He could not quite see through the faceplate. Turl was singed. There was some dried green blood on his jacket. Suddenly, Turl's hand blurred and a small gun appeared in it like magic. Johnny dropped at the first hint of motion and fired. There was a flash as Turl's gun exploded in his paw. Then he was up and starting to run. There were questions Johnny wanted answered. His first snapshot had been lucky and had hit the gun. He drew a careful bead on Turl's right leg. "Here's one for the horses," flashed through his head. He fired. The leg buckled and Turl went down. The foot stayed twisted in the wrong direction. Johnny walked over to where the exploded gun lay. It was a very slim weapon. Was this what was called an assassin gun? Turl was lying there motionless.
"Quit shamming, Turl," said Johnny.
Turl suddenly laughed and sat up.
"Why didn't you die in the morgue?"
"Animal,"
said Turl, putting his foot right way too, but carefully sitting quiet under the menace of the gun 20 feet away.
"I can hold my breath for 4 minutes."
He was too cheerful. His leg was bleeding through his pants. He was singed. But he was too cheerful. Johnny knew there was something else. He backed up. Moving so that he could keep Turl in view out of the corner of his eye, he glanced around the plain. The compound was behind them, possibly 20 miles. Gunfire was coming faintly from that direction. He knew he should make some effort to help them.
Where were the girls?
Probably they had gone on. No, there they were. Johnny hadn't expected that. They were coming back. Riding at a slow trot, cautiously, they were coming back. They were about a mile away. It hit Johnny suddenly. The shock of not finding them in the cage, the fear that they were still in that holocaust down there, had stayed suspended. He was swept by a tide of relief. They were all right. Johnny waved his arm to signal them to come on in. Still alert to Turl, Johnny scanned farther afield. One of the pilots that had bailed out had come in this direction. He peered. Yes, there was somebody moving about 4 miles to the south. Hard to see due to camouflage dress, but a trained eye such as Johnny's detected by the motion of things, not only by contrasts. Turl was laughing again.
"You'll never get away with it, animal. Cyclo will be into this place in a swarm."
Johnny didn't answer. He waved the girls in. The horses were shying as they came around the burning wreck. Chrissy was mounted on Old Pork, Patty on Dancer. The horses weren't blowing, so their earlier riding must not have been so fast. The girls were unable to believe it was Johnny. Chrissy stayed mounted some distance away. She was ghastly pale. Her neck was raw red from the collar, now gone.
"Johnny? Is that you, Johnny?"
He looked different in the blue clothing. Patty had no doubts. She sprang from the back of Dancer and raced to Johnny and put her arms around his waist, her hair coming up to his pocket.
"See? See?"
she was shouting back to Chrissy.
"I told you Johnny would come. I told you and told you."
Chrissy was sitting her horse and crying.
"You got the monster,"
said Patty, excited. pointing at Turl. "Don't get between me and him," said Johnny, caressing her hair but holding the gun on Turl. "He should be at the compound. He must not dally here." Johnny didn't want the girls near him in case Turl moved. He had a sudden idea.
"Chrissy, look down to the south there, about 4 miles."
Chrissy took a grip on herself and wiped her eyes. Johnny wanted her to do something. She looked. She tried to speak, then cleared her throat and tried again.
"Yes, Johnny."
She looked harder.
"It's something moving."
"It's a friend," said Johnny. "Ride down there as fast as you can whip up Old Pork and bring him back here." Chrissy straightened up. She guided Old Pork well around Turl and then lit out to the south, her hair streaming back as Old Pork raced away. The gunfire was picking up in volume to the south. Being gentle with Patty and walking sideways while keeping a gun on Turl, Johnny got to a position where he could see the compound. They stood on a slightly higher rise than it. In the clear afternoon air, he could see it, in miniature, but vividly. White water was spraying 200 or 300 feet in the air. It looked like a waterfall in reverse. Then he knew what had happened. The automatic fire sprinkler system had let go. Those Scots down there were fighting in a torrent of water. What he was afraid of was that the cyclos would get out a tank or some additional battle planes. He surveyed the sky. It was free of planes. As he watched, he saw a flash of fire, and then the distant boomp came to them, the sound bazookas make. He was not sure the bazookas could get through a cyclo tank. They needed air support down there, and here he was 20 miles away. There wasn't another single pilot in those assault teams. They had committed their all. He shifted the gun impatiently. Turl was sitting there laughing again. By rights, he should simply shoot him full of daylight. But he had a feeling Turl knew something and was up to something more.
"How'd the girls get away?" said Johnny to Turl.
"Why, animal, how can you doubt me? I promised you I'd let them loose as soon as you delivered the gold. I simply kept my word this morning. I didn't suspect you'd be so false you would..."
"Come off it, Turl. Why'd you let them loose?"
Turl laughed again, more loudly. Patty had gone over to get Dancer, who was wandering off. She was coming back.
"I don't know why this nasty old awful thing did it, but just before dawn, he cut off our collars and told us to get on the horses and ride away. We went about 10 miles and hid, thinking maybe you'd show up. We had no place to go. Then this afternoon, the whole place seemed to blow up, bang, bang, and we rode toward the mountains."
Suddenly, Johnny added it up. He spoke to Turl. "So you murdered Char, did you, and left him in the cage with that man knife in him so that man could be blamed for his death? The question is, Turl, how are you going to wipe out the humans?" Turl had been looking at his watch. He reached toward his pocket. Johnny abruptly made him desist.
"Just 2 talons, said Turl, holding them up.
Johnny indicated he could, but was very watchful. Turl plucked something that was about a foot square from his side pocket, moving very delicately and gingerly under the watchful gun. It was a large remote computer board, thin, familiar in machine operation, but a bit bigger and dirtier than usual. With a laugh, Turl tossed it toward Johnny, who backed up in case it exploded.
"You took the wrong remote off me, rat brain."
Johnny stared down at it, not comprehending. The keyboard only had date, hour, and fire on it. It had no stop or correction tab.
"It's irreversible," said Turl. "Once punched and activated, the board is worthless. This morning, before the semi-annual, I used it up."
Turl glanced at his watch.
"In about 10 minutes now, you'll all collect your pay, whether you messed up Cyclo or not."
He went into a gale of laughter.
"You are after the wrong remote."
The laughter made him sputter in his face mask.
"And here you are," he finally managed, 20 miles away, and you can't do a thing about it, and couldn't anyway."
He pounded his paws in the dirt. He was laughing so hard.
7. At that exact moment, Zut in the underground hangars was almost out of his wits. Ever since that wild recoil had occurred at the end of the semi-annual, things had been in chaos. The rumor had been flying about that it was humans out there.
Men. Zut knew better.
Those silly slugs could do nothing. It was undoubtedly Tallneps, landing in here from their system. Zut, although his thinking was interrupted every few seconds by curses at Turl, had it all worked out. The Tallneps had buggered up the teleportation bands to paralyze counterattack, and were in here after the still not inconsiderable mineral content of this planet. There had been trouble with the Tallneps before, and the last war with them was inconclusive. They were short, about half the size of a cyclo, and they could breathe almost anything, and were immune to cyclo gas barrages, worse luck. Therefore, he was rigging a Mark 32 low-flying ground strafer, the most heavily gunned plane in the hundreds of planes in these hangars. And damn and blast that Turl! He was supposed to be in charge of defense.